Hello, this is episode 8 of Alan's Eyes and Ears, and I'm Professor Alan, your host. On this episode, we'll be looking at my year in review, the comics and books I read during 2023, and reviewing a few other things I did this year, and maybe a few comments about some plans for the new year. But first, a little feedback from the last 3 episodes. And we start by challenging the time-space continuum and going over feedback on the feedback episode, episode 5. Martin Gray referenced my comment that we would be reviewing listener complaints, concerns, and doubts by proclaiming that he never doubted. Good to know. Thank you, Mart. Referring to the complaints element of that post, Sean Urbanski posted a terrific pic of the one and only Dr. Doom with the notation, Complaint Department. Well, Sean, similar to Doom, our number one priority on the Alan's Eyes and Ears show is customer service. Clinton from Coffee and Comics lamented that he missed his opportunity to send in a polite yet stern letter. No, Clinton, never too late for that. Send those missives and concerns directly to the aforementioned complaint department. Extra postage to get that to Latveria, don't forget. And poor Gene Hendricks was disappointed that the episode was not the return of How to Organize Your Comics. Don't worry, Gino. That's coming. Have no fear. And then, on our New England road trip episode, Mrs. Quarterbin said that it was nice to hear Ange's side of the story of the time we all spent together, and to know that we did not scare his girlfriend Anna too much. Thank you, Mrs. Quarterbin. And yes, we did listen to the episode together, running errands, the day it came out. Because a wife who was willing to listen to her husband's geeky podcast is a keeper. And Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, said this sounded like a great trip. Seems like your superpower on this trip was where to find ice cream. Kirk Spencer pointed out that that would be an excellent power to have. And yes, Robert, I'm not saying that my enhanced abilities to find ice cream and then select the best flavor, I'm not saying that that's X-Men caliber or Justice League worthy in terms of a power, but I am saying I think it could get me into the Legion of Superheroes. Just think of the buddy cop adventures of Professor Ice Cream Finder and Matter Eater Lad. Just saying. And Sir Manuel posted this message along with a few pics. Going through a few hundred comic books to see which ones are kid-friendly so we can donate them through our nonprofit initiative, Comics for Christmas, while I listen to the road trip episode from Professor Allen and Dr. Ange. Well, speaking for the doc, I'm sure we both are glad that we could help you in your important work there. And on to the Sad Sack Prose Stories with Shag episode. The notorious JJG reported that he had been reading a lot of Sad Sack lately. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on these. And poor Gene Hendricks commented on this one as well. He commented on the appropriateness of Sarge fraternizing with the sack. Yes, a sergeant is an enlisted man, but he's also a non-commissioned officer. NCOs hanging around with those under their command, to my knowledge, is discouraged. Yeah, that makes sense, Gene. Thank you. Billy D. of Magazines and Monsters commented on how Shag and I were finding our joy at the end of the world. Yeah, it does feel that way sometimes, doesn't it? But not to get too darkness to light on y'all, because we are technically still in Christmas. If you don't believe me, ask Dave McIlvaney. But I'm reminded of the quote attributed to Martin Luther, who, when asked by a follower in Reformation-era Germany what he would do if he knew the world would end tomorrow, his answer, "I would plant an apple tree." Now, obviously, I try not to give Shag too much credit for anything, but this find your joy thing is actually pretty decent advice, though I'll deny ever saying that. And even if you use this audio as evidence, I'll claim it was created by AI. And Sir Martin of Grey called it a surprise episode on a fascinating subject. I remember the early pre-letter column Silver Age DCs I inherited as a kid would often have a tech story, but they were never really about the comic's star, so I'd ignore them. Hurrah for these Beetle Bailey-specific titles! Sorry, I mean Satsec. I think we used to get these comics as part of the Ballast business, and there were a few licensed UK issues, but I don't remember buying any, as the title put me off. Sad Sack? Shag, thank you for explaining what the name means. How very coarse. I realize that the definite article is there in the Jerry Lewis film title, but it felt really weird to hear Professor Allen say the Sad Sack all the time. Is that what it says in the comics? In which case, why isn't that the title of the series? And why didn't Shag take a turn at reading the stories out? Okay, let me interrupt Martin here mid-feedback to answer some of these questions. In terms of the, at least in recording those stories, I read every word as printed, with the exception of, in those four stories, there was one obvious typo. So if it was in the stories, that was why. In terms of generally referring to the character, it is kind of a conundrum, because that is his name, Sad Sack, but he is also called the Sad Sack in the manner that Shag described. So it is confusing, I will grant you that. In terms of Shag reading one or two of the stories, look, I know the episode itself would have enough Shag in it already, so yeah, pass on that one. Now, I hope this was not noticeable with the editing of the episode, but I had recorded those well in advance and dropped them into the episode, I hope, pretty seamlessly. So if I do revisit the concept in 2024 with a different batch of stories, a different guest, I still think I would do the reading myself. For one thing, I really want every word to be read correctly per the printed story. And if I had someone else read it and they made a little mistake, I'd hate to have to go back and ask them to redo it. But I really do want that to be as perfectly accurate of the story as possible. And also, again, I just really like doing them. I like doing voices. So I think I will probably jealously guard that privilege. At this point, I have another probably dozen or so pre-recorded for potential future use. Mart continues, "I'd rather have a prose story without pictures than pictures without words any day." Yes, Mart, yes. These stories were actually decently written. They had a nice rhythm, with sentences that were short, without being unduly staccato. You know, reading that, does anybody else think that Mart is auditioning to be the guest next time I do one of these prose stories episodes? Sure sounds that way to me. Specifically, on the stories, he said that in the third story, that was the one where Sarge was, let's update it to current sensitivities and say he was having an emotional health crisis regarding Sad and Sadie. Martin said he was worried that Sarge was having a heart attack. I was concerned for the man's health. The final story about the firehouse was the worst. When a story ends by saying, "You have probably guessed by now," it's not even trying to pretend that it has a surprise in store. Also, Sad Sack endangered lives all throughout that one. He should have been shot. Well, Mart, I did not see that last sentence coming, but I do appreciate your law and order stance. And not to speak for other members of the roundtable, but I think you may have just gained some additional respect from Sir Luke with that comment as well. And Mart wraps up with this. Feedback next episode. Hurrah! I do miss having feedback at the start of all your shows. It made me listen the minute a new show dropped. And this echoes a sentiment that Mart expressed earlier in the run of this new show when I talked that I was unsure of how to handle feedback. Mart said, "I vote for feedback every episode. That guarantees a listen, even when you're discussing something like how a collection is organized. I love the sound of your voice." Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That is interesting, and it is a comment I will definitely take under advisement. No promises, but thanks for that interesting perspective, Mark. I hope you enjoyed today's feedback section. As they used to say on some U.S. beer commercials, Martin, this one's for you. Social media support for those three episodes came from Ed Moore from Teal Productions, Chris from Professor Frenzy, which is still a show, the Days of High Adventure podcast, Bill from the Bat Pod, Billy D from Magazines and Monsters, Sir Manuel Carmone of Truthful Comics, Dr. Chuck from the Bowling Green Pop Culture Studies Department, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, The Irredeemable Shag, Podcasting's Michael Bailey, Keith G. Baker, Sean M. Myers from the Batman Family Reunion, Jim the Canada Daredevil, King Dinosaur, Dr. Jennifer Swartz-Levine, Roger Preeb, Dr. Bob, James Williams, we are with you. Vic and Phoenix, Ranger Gord from the Prairie Justice Podcast, Jay Campbell, Derek WC, that big fan hole, Shane Kelly, Matt McKeegan, and the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. And that makes it time to take a break. And after this podcast promo, we'll be back to talk all things 2023.
Edward and Alphonse Elric, as a result of attempting the forbidden act of resurrecting their mother with alchemy, have paid the price. Edward lost an arm and a leg. Alphonse lost his whole body, his soul now attached to a suit of armor. Together, they search for a way to make their bodies complete again and uncover a deadly plot by their country's military rulers. That's the concept of Hiromu Arakawa's Fullmetal Alchemist, one of the best manga ever made. Tim and Patrick are rereading Arakawa's masterwork in search of interesting sound effects, translation errors, goofy humor, and, oh yeah, a great story. The podcast is The Law of Equivalent Exchange, a chapter-by-chapter look at the manga Fullmetal Alchemist. New episodes every other Monday, wherever podcasts are found. What are you willing to exchange?
And we're back. We're going to do this episode, this year in review, mostly by combining segments that we have done in the past on different shows or different venues, maybe with an additional thing or two thrown in. Starting with a segment that Em and I used to cover in our anniversary episodes of Short Box Showcase, but I think it fits better here. So let's talk about the network, the Relatively Geeky Year in Review for 2023. Now this year, and even though most of you won't be listening to this until 2024, I am recording it and releasing it just barely, in 2023. So I am going to refer to 2023 as this year. Just wanted to point that out to clarify that in case you'd be confused by that terminology. So this year, the network released 37 episodes, the 37th of which is this one. This is actually more than either 2022 or 2021, and is pretty much my target for the network, three per month. So 36 to 40, that's about what I shoot for, which works out to an episode every 9 or 10 days on average. I do want to talk a little bit about our process and about a possible speed bump, pothole, that could cause us some trouble down the road. But first, some numbers, some stats. Admit it. That's why you're all here. Of those 37 episodes, 12 were quarter bins, 8 were the wrapping up of the Comics Reading Journal, another 8 were the start of this new effort, Alan's Eyes and Ears, 5 were Doom-related, 4 were short box showcases or adjacent. By adjacent, I mean the replay of episode 1 and the 10th anniversary discussion with me and Em. I think a monthly quarter bin is a good process. I should probably do more Doom episodes. No, really, it is in my best interest to do more Doom content, if you know what I mean. This show, Eyes and Ears, has energized me. I like the variety. We have a range of episodes planned for the new year. Another episode about the collection. Another about movies I've recently seen. I'm working on a guest-laden episode about superheroines from the DC side. And I even have an old-fashioned, hey, let's look at this 4-issue comic series episode on the agenda. Looking forward to all of that and more. On the Doom side, obviously more 2099 is in order. And I have one on the schedule where he guest stars, I mean, takes over, honestly, the book of an interesting character who, sadly, has had much better movie interpretations than poor Doomy ever has. The quarter bin has a few books from the 2020s schedule. That was something I mentioned recently on a quarter bin episode as something that I should work on. And there are only 4 short box showcase episodes remaining until we wrap that one up for good with the final blowout episode 75. And I expect Em and I to get through at least a couple of those remaining 4 in 2024. Except, and this is the worry I have spent a decade podcasting in one specific way. And if anything in that process changes, I'd really rather not have to try and learn a new way. I know I'm being vague, but let me put it this way. I divvy up the process of creating a podcast into 4 parts. Research and prep, recording, editing, and producing. I separate out, I differentiate editing from producing. Editing to me is everything it takes to get the raw recording into its final version. Cutting things out, the occasional re-record if necessary, maybe adding music, adding the promo and outro, all of that, and then exporting that into an MP3 file. To me, that makes up what I call podcast editing. And then after that is the producing phase, which to me is the blog post, adding an image to the file, uploading it to the cloud, and then doing the minimal amount of coding that I need to, that I know, to allow for the file that I've placed on the blog to get to your phone. And that's the part of the process that I have a concern about future-wise, potentially. We will get to that in a second, but first, in the interest of transparency, let's quickly go over the financial report for the network. This sounds like a diversion, but it does tie in. In terms of our revenue, Patreon, corporate underwriting, sponsorships, advertising, call it whatever you want, those all held steady this year at zero. Now, I say we have no Patreon, but what we do have is the hashtag comic book circle of life. And so thanks again, as always, to generous, fine folk who regularly send in comics for me to read and yap about, including, but not limited to, Dr. Ange and Kirk, Joe and Tom and Laurel, Manuel, Luke, the list goes on, everybody else. Truly appreciated, y'all. And on the expense side, for file storage, feed creation, RSS maintenance, website fees, travel and entertainment, employee fringe benefits, the year-end Christmas party, all of those costs also held steady this year. At zero, no surprise, everything we do at Relatively Geeky, save physical equipment like a microphone, which, to be fair, I do use for other purposes like academic meetings and Zoom office hours and classes and all of that. Everything else that we do at the network, not only is it cheap, it is free. The blog, the editing software, the storage, all of it is free. You've known me for 10 plus years. This can't be a surprise to you. The problem is that one of those elements, the maintenance of the RSS feed, which is where Apple Podcasts and then all of the other services pull from to populate their apps, that product, that process, is still out there, still chugging along, but Google, it is a Google product feed burner, they're no longer supporting it. So it's one of those things that may just, you know, stop working one day when I try to produce an episode. That just could very well happen. And if it ever does, it could be 20 years from now. Could be 20 months from now. Could be 20 minutes from now. And the long-term problem with that is I don't want to learn a new system. And I don't think there are any other free ones. I don't begrudge anyone who chooses to go with Podomatic, Libsyn, Buzzsprout, Podbean, or Blueberry. Is Blueberry still a thing? Anyway, I just don't know that I've got it in me to make that kind of change, if that kind of change is ever forced on me. The other minor thing, a thing that FeedBurner no longer does, is keep stats for the podcasts. So the only numbers I have to share are from Spotify, which represent a pretty small slice of our audience. But according to them, and I certainly believe this, the most listened to episode we put out in 2023 was the return of Shortbox Showcase, episode 70 about identities. Of course. Because everybody loves M, la di da. Just so you know, I loved M way before any of you did, okay? And of course, if you're going to be the second most popular host on your network, second behind M, I know, it is not all that bad, okay? Okay, back to this feed burner thing. If that link in the chain disappears, I mean, this is true if any of the links in the chain disappear. What I suspect I would actually do is pay for one of those services for the minimum amount of time, a month or a quarter or whatever, and wrap up all the shows and ride off into the sunset. And what would I do if that happened? Like, what would I do with all my free time? Probably go back to my pre-podcast hobby and creative outlet of writing unfinished novels. Which is a perfect, albeit unintentional, segue into discussing my reading year. And we'll start with the new item that I've been tracking this year, the Geeky Magazines, all 51 of them. Now, four of these are more appropriate for Dorkness to Light, issues of the quite fine magazine Christian History, which leaves 47 for analysis here. 8 of these were from a relatively recent genre for me to dig into, the mystery digests, 5 Alfred Hitchcocks and 3 Ellery Queens, both of which are still being published to this day. I want to mention that when it is still the case, because the magazine industry has been in the same slow speed death spiral for the last few decades that the comic book industry has been. So a lot of the magazines I will mention in this segment have ceased publication, at least in physical print form. I guess a few continue as online journals. Now, I am fairly new to the mystery genre, at least in terms of these magazines, but even with the small number that I've read of these two titles, I do sense a difference between the two. The Ellery Queen magazine tends to publish more of what I would call straight detective stories, with the protagonist being a police officer or a private detective or sometimes the criminal. But it is a straight crime/mystery story. While in the Alfred Hitchcock magazine, they are willing to expand the word mystery to include what we as comics people might understand as weird stories, as in Weird War or Weird Western, where weird can mean perhaps the hint of the supernatural, or a mystery that resolves with the possibility that maybe a ghost was involved. So I just thought it was interesting to see how these two magazines, in ostensibly the same genre, the mystery genre, seem to have slightly different takes on the types of stories that they will include in their magazine. So it's 39 in the fantasy and sci-fi genre, although 3 of these were Locus magazine, which is almost more of a trade periodical about the sci-fi publishing business, author interviews, reviews, industry info, that sort of thing. So technically speaking, it's 36 actual fiction mags, or primarily fiction mags. I mentioned online, and a few of these that I read were online, but the vast, vast majority were print versions. In order, I read 9 issues of Analog, 6 of Fantasy and Science Fiction, and 4 of Asimov's. Those 3 titles are the leading titles in the genre, and have been since the 70s, much longer than that, in the case of Analog. And again, all 3 of these are still publishing. I guess technically the most I can say is that they did publish new issues during 2023. These are ones that are the most often for sale at half-price books, or even occasionally at comic book shops. It's not often, but evidently people who sell comic collections to comic book shops will occasionally have a bunch of these magazines as well, and they get bought by the shop along with. So I have been lucky enough to find these in a number of places, and kind friends and listeners have passed some along to me as well. Now, I need to be clear in talking about these sci-fi mags that I do not collect these. I read them. Yes, I have a small bookcase full of them, but I do not keep them after I've read them. That is the definition of a collector. I'm just a reader. Fortunately, I do know a small cadre of geeky friends who also like these, so sometimes they will get included in comic book Circle of Life shipments. So of the second, or in a few cases, third-tier titles, I read three issues each of the Classic Digest's Galaxy and If, and also three each of the glossy magazine's Realms of Fantasy, Adventures in Sword and Sorcery. None of those four that I just mentioned are currently in publication, to the best of my knowledge. And then two from Lightspeed, those with online via the Hoopla app. And then one each of Amazing Stories, Fantastic Sci-Fi, and Aboriginal Sci-Fi. And the publication dates for items of this type that I read during this year range from the late 1950s all the way into the 2020s. And in terms of reading these going forward, I think once a week for these is kind of a heavy pace for me, but I think I can stay pretty close to that. Maybe 35 to 40 per year is reasonable. Now, my steady reading of these will continue to cut into my comic book numbers, but again, I'm okay with that. I really like the mystery magazines. Again, that was Ellery Queen and Alfred Hitchcock. I like those as a change of pace from the sci-fi and fantasy. And maybe next year I'll try to rebalance that a little bit, rejigger it, read some more of the mystery ones. But as always, when talking about plans and talking about the future, you always have to say, we'll see. Moving on to books, this is a topic that I've covered every year on the blog as a year-end post, but I'm pretty sure my podcasts get more listeners than the blog ever had readers, so this is probably a better place to talk about this information. I've actually been keeping track of my reading for about 15 years now in terms of the websites or apps that I've used over that time. First up was one called bibliophile.org, and then Library Thing, and now, of course, it's all on Goodreads. Now, I supplement Goodreads with more of an offline app as well. You may have heard of it. It's called the Mead Stenopad. So, in 2023, I read 67 books, down slightly from 70 the year before, but it's right in the range of what I've read since 2009, actually. Since then, the number every year has fallen somewhere between 50 and 84. And in 2023, the number that I read, 67, is literally the exact middle of that range, exactly halfway between 50 and 84, for whatever that means. Before 2009, in other words, before I listened to so many podcasts, I would routinely read closer to 140 or 150 books. And yes, I am totally 100% completely counting listening to unabridged audiobooks as reading. In some very particular academic or scientific contexts, it might not be the best word to use, but in a more generic sense, I completely defend the use of the word reading. Feel free to feedback and let me know how very wrong I am. But to me, consuming the totality of a specific work by an author, whether that's through your eyes or your ears, or even via Braille, to me, that's reading. Now, something that's abridged, summarized? No, of course not. But an unabridged audio work? Yes, of course it's reading. So, the amount of stuff I listen to has probably held steady for 15 or 20 years now. But more than half of what I listen to is now certainly podcast listening. So anyway, 67 books read, and I think that's a reasonable goal going forward, 52 to 60, maybe, again, More time to magazines maybe going forward. But one book per week or five in a month, I think that's reasonable. And like I said, I love audiobooks. And 41 of these 67 books were consumed in that manner. 20 were of the traditional dead tree variety. 2 were ebooks, and 4 were serialized. That is, novels told across multiple issues of those sci-fi digests. A much higher proportion of my reading this year was fiction than in the past 59 of the 67 books, which is about 88%. And next year, I would like to, I don't think correct that, is the right phrase, but at least adjust that so it's more in line with the more common or more standard ratio for me, which might be closer to 70 or 75% fiction. 88%, I'll be honest, that's it's not that that's too much fiction, but it's not enough nonfiction. Those 59 novels break down as follows. Note that the total exceeds 59, as many books fit into more than one category, like young adult sci-fi or a Christian historical novel. Science fiction is usually the largest genre I read in, and it was again this year, to a huge degree, 26 sci-fi novels, followed by a measly 8 mysteries, which is a huge gap, 7 each for fantasy, thriller, and Christian novel, 6 adventures, 3 in historical fiction, 3 in young adult, and a pair of contemporary novels. Of the 8 nonfiction works I read, which again is way too small a number, 4 were devotional slash theological slash Christian living books, and we had 1 each in history, politics, finance, sports, and comic books. And speaking of comic books, that does bring us to that topic, and we will talk about my habits in terms of comic book reading right after this.
In 1975, Jaws was released. It is routinely regarded as one of the greatest films of all time and is generally credited with creating the concept of the summer blockbuster. In 1978, in an obvious cash grab, Jaws 2 was released, failing to have lightning strike a second time, but presenting a generally enjoyable film. In 1983, Jaws 3D was released, shamelessly attempting to take advantage of a gullible audience. By 1987, there was no pretense of quality as Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine cashed paychecks for sleepwalking through a pointless and incredulous sequel. In 2016, Paul Spitero created Is It Jaws, in which he and a group of rotating guest hosts discuss new and old movies and place them up against the Jaws scale, which ignores some elements of the actual films and sets forth a rating scale. Jaws, an all-time great classic film. Jaws 2, an enjoyable film with some flaws but worthy of multiple viewings. Jaws 3, a moderately enjoyable film. And finally, Jaws 4, a bad movie. Please join Paul and his guests as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
And again, we are back with our final segment of this year-in-review episode, in which I perform the same type of comic reading analysis that I've done a few times over the years. This used to be a segment on the Comics Reading Journal. The intent is to spot any trends in my reading habits. So what I'm going to do here is give an analysis of the just under 1,500 comics that I read in 2023, which is an increase of about 100 from the year before, but still down by 400 or 500 from where I'd gotten in 2020 and 2021, aka the prime COVID years. This is a range that I expect to continue, reading maybe 25 issues a week, as opposed to the 35 to 40 that I had read during those peak years. So first up, the numbers by publisher. This year, DC and Marvel both slipped a bit, continuing a long-term trend, making up just 39% combined of all the comics I read, DC at 23 and Marvel at 16. Not only is this the lowest combined reading share for the big two, since I've been keeping track of this data since 2015, it is the lowest for each of those companies individually as well. DC at 23 and Marvel at 16. Archie again was the number three publisher with a record 10.5% reading share. Image also had a good year, almost 9%. The series from Image that I read good amounts of include Gunslinger Spawn, Rising Stars, Moonshine, and The Good Asian. Each of these ended up between 10 and 20 issues each, and almost all of these were read via the Hoopla digital app. Dynamite came in at nearly 5%, a good chunk of that being the title Jennifer Blood. At the very end of last year, I purchased a deep discount batch of trades from SourcePoint Press, and I read a bunch of those, so that publisher came in sixth place at just over 3%. Five more publishers topped 2% in order: Dark Horse, Titan, Zenoscope, Boom, and Gold Key. No other single publisher topped 1%. In terms of the format of the books I read, we have some changes here. Some reversions to prior trends, actually. After 2 years above 50% digital, dropped under that. It was still the number one format, but down to 45%. Almost all of that is via Hoopla and the DC app, although I also purchased some Humble Bundles throughout the year that included digital comics, so that is part of this number as well. Floppies bounced back after two low years, back up to 42%, leaving 13% to physical trades. That number, the 13%, that was the highest since 2020, made up from two main sources. I mentioned those SourcePoint trades. That is a lot of this, but also the library trades that I read for prepping for the Spider-Man conference in September. That was also part of that increase in physical trades also. And you've probably heard this from me many, many times, but let me plug again the Hoopla digital app. This system runs through a number of public libraries here in the U.S., and if you have a library card with a system that utilizes Hoopla, then you can receive access to the stuff that Hoopla has on contract with that library system, which can include ebooks, audiobooks, movies, and also comics. It is a wonderful system. One change to note in this analysis was the era from which I read comics. I break this into the decades, pre-70s, 70s, 80s, 90s, etc. The share of new books, books from the last few years, stayed around 10%, among the lowest share since I've been keeping track of this information. But I read another 10% from 2020 or 2021, so I don't totally ignore recent books. The 2000s and the 2010s stayed pretty consistent, combining for about a third of the books that I read. And then every decade before that is actually pretty equal in a very narrow band: the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, and everything before the 70s, each fell between 10 and 14%. So the trend this year was that there really was no trend in those older books, no era from before 2010 really was significantly more or less popular than any other era. And no surprise, this was a pretty cheap year for me, although slightly less cheap than past years. The recent trend had been that almost three-quarters of the comics that I would read any year were free, but that dropped to 68% this year. Those include the library trades, also the Hoopla, and the DCU apps, and of course all the books that came via the generosity of lovely listeners through the hashtag comic book circle of life. If you were someone who participated in that last year or over any of the last number of years, I thank you. Books in the cheapest ranges, well, other than free, 1 to 24 cents and 25 to 49 cents, both of those increased a little bit. The 25 to 49 cent range made up 11% of the books I read, and 50 to 99 cents were 15%. This is because super cheap books are hard to find these days. Darn you, inflation! Over the last few years, I've had to trade out my predominant cheap bin diving from the now really hard to find quarter bins to the 50 cent bins at Pulp Reality. And that range, 50 to 99 cents, is predominantly those books, but also a bunch of Bronze Age books that I bought from a buddy recently who was going to be moving overseas in a few months, and he needed some help relieving himself of his comic collection. And what I bought from him worked out to about 70 cents each, so those would be in this range as well. But I am proud to say that I continue to cut down on my reading at the high end of my price ranges. Only 36 of the issues I read all year cost me a dollar or more. And only 3 of those, not percent, actual number 3, were over $2. All that really means is no pull list, no new comics being purchased, and also no new annuals or special edition issue 1000s or anything like that. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I must admit to you all that I have purchased more expensive comics in the last year or two. Books in the, I hope you're sitting down, $3 to $4 and even $5 range to fill in some holes in the collection. But I haven't read those yet, which is why they haven't shown up in this part of the analysis. One thing I started reporting on the last couple years is the titles that I've read the most of, and I've loved that, so I give you the top 10 countdown of titles that I read the most of in 2023. And it is quite a different list from last year. Now, like I said, my overall reading was up a little bit, and that shows up here. The top couple of titles that I read were ones that I read 30 or 40 of per title. Last year, the high was actually 20 for any particular title. So we have a very strange mix here, no doubt. Starting at 10th place, 13 issues of Nexus, then 14 issues each of Gunslinger Spawn, the awesome Scooby-Doo team-up, and to follow along with the Lady Laurel and her crew from the new 52 run Birds of Prey. And then a three-way tie for fourth place at 18 issues each, Pep Digital, Solar Flare, and mostly to follow along with my buddy Billy D in The Brave and the Bob, The Brave and the Bold. Third place, this is the first four series of a very bloody series, appropriately titled Jennifer Blood. Second place, less bloody, but again, a female-led series, Betty and Veronica. Although it's possible that I'm cheating here, because I am combining the original title, Archie's Girls, Betty and Veronica, and also the 1980s reboot that dropped the Archie's Girls bit from the title. So I'm counting both of those together. And then at the top of the list, no surprise given the academic conference I mentioned earlier, Amazing Spider-Man. Now there's also another way of classifying the reading instead of by title, and that's by character, to give a more representative view of who and what I read in 2023. And this countdown starts at number 10, Conan, through a variety of incarnations and publishers and runs, and then 9, Spawn, all of which were of the Gunslinger Spawn variety, which I mentioned before. I counted that as a Western title for July, and that's why I read so many of those. Number 8, The Scooby Gang. Thank you, Scooby-Doo team-up. Number 7, Liesl Van Helsing, a Zenoscope heroine. And 6, not a title, not a character, but a world. I know, but look, it's my show. I can do this. So number 6, The Star Wars World. Moving up the list, number 5, Jennifer Blood. Number 4, Superman. We're including the John Kent series, World's Finest, Action, and a wide variety of other titles as well. Number 3, just inching ahead of the Man of Steel, The Dark Knight Detective. Brave and the Bold, Detective, Batman, etc. And number 2, instead of breaking this out by specific character, I'm just going to say the Archie Gang. Tons of Betty and Veronica, like I mentioned, but also lots of Pep Digital, and bunches of various issues with the word Archie in the title. And number 1, no surprise, based on what I said earlier, it's Spidey, in all his forms and versions and Spider-Verse versions. And there you have it. I don't really have any directive plans for my 2024 reading, other than a very general one. And that is based on something I talked about when I brought the comics reading journal to a close. And that is my desire to tackle some longer runs of titles. And I haven't really done a lot of that the last few months. Jennifer Blood might be the one exception. What I'm finding is that it's kind of difficult to make those changes of habits in my reading. That's been harder than I anticipated. So I think I just need to be more intentional about that. Also be a little patient with myself, recognizing that sometimes old habits are tough to break out of. But I do want to be more intentional about pulling 10, 20, 30 issue runs, either physically or via trade, and just sitting down and blasting through them. And maybe in a year or so, when we review 2024, we can see how that all worked out for me. And wow, that was indeed a lot of talking. And I hope you enjoyed all your listening. Thanks for hanging with me for this mega-sized end-of-year episode. If you want to share your thoughts on any of these topics, books you read, sci-fi mags, comics, anything that went past your eyes and ears during the year, I would love to hear about that. On comics, tell me about your Marvel, DC, indie breakdown for the year. whether your reading increased or decreased this year, your most read title or character or format. We'd all enjoy hearing any of that information from any of you. We value your comments and appreciate your listenership. Feedback can be sent via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or a comment on the Twitter or Facebook post for the episode, or directly on the blog. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. All are welcome. Thanks for listening. Take care. We wish you season's greetings, a Merry Christmas, and a joyous new year.